Roger and James here, from the Discingdom podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking all about Solo, A Star Wars Story, talking about our thoughts on the movie. We're not going to get into any of the other bits and pieces, but primarily just going to be talking about the movie. We're going to be doing full, well, we'll be talking spoilers, though there wasn't really anything major in there, bar one thing, because it's been out a couple of weeks. I've been on vacation down in, over in Walt Disney World for a couple of weeks. I did sneak out because I was down in Disney Springs and they had all the posters and the flags out outside the AMC theater. And when you're walking around the west side, all you could hear was Star Wars stuff. I put a Solo t-shirt on one day and everybody was asking me about how the movie was. Was it any good? Have you seen it yet? Good. I literally was walking. I must have been asked 15 times in one day because I put this Solo t-shirt on. I was like, oh, what's the movie like? Is it any good? Oh, I'm going to go see it. I'm like, oh, yeah. It's like, I have had that many people like, it's quite nice, kind of. There was a, I think being in Disney on that, in that bubble, there was an excitement about the movie, and I snuck off one night to down to Disney Springs to watch it. I've got to be honest, lovely, great big couches, kind of big leather set chairs that recline and big screen, and it's like, oh, this is a lot more comfortable than back home than some hard chair that just sits upright with no padding. it was like, oh, this is comfy.
I will say this, a lot of theaters in the United States, not all, but a lot of the theaters are converting to the more living room-esque experience where they're going for the full-on comfort, which is fantastic. Yeah. They really need that.
Before I even get into Solo, what's up with you guys eating? Why are you having food delivered during a meal? Why is there a person sat next to me eating pizza and another person sat eating a cheeseburger? It's like dining experience and like have your food delivered. Well, it's like, I'm at the cinema. Go before your meal. That's a side story. That was just like, what are you doing?
That's an entirely different experience. Some places do it. That's still not the norm here in the States. But yes, the one at Disney Springs in Florida is a dine-in theater, and it's an interesting experience. Yes. I'll give you that. Anyway. Now, not all of the theaters there are. I think it's very specific ones, and in fact, I think they even have Showtime split for major releases where you can go to the dine-in theater or the non.
It wasn't particularly dine-in one. It's just the fact that someone's sitting there eating a box of pizza on his lap. I was like. Crikey, this is, you know, we moan at home when we bring out the little packet of sweets at Russell's. But anyway, on to Solo.
You were jealous. That's what it was.
Yeah, I'm definitely not.
All right, so Solo.
So Solo. Initial thoughts on it for me, enjoyable movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I liked it. And that's kind of, that was it, really. It's like, I enjoyed it. It was good. It was fine. It just didn't do anything amazing. That was all.
It was a perfectly fine heist movie. It was enjoyable. I will say, I went home and I was like, yeah, that was fun. I had a good time watching this movie. And then I promptly forgot most of it. But it was a perfectly decent way to spend 2 hours movie time. I've certainly seen far worse movies. I've certainly seen far better movies. It exceeded my expectations, but my expectation was set to such a low bar that's not actually saying much.
Yeah, it was a really odd one, because I saw so many people on like Twitter and Facebook all going, oh, I went to see Solo. It was good. It was almost like this like weird thing of everyone's there might be why, you know, we're going to talk about that next week. But there was this kind of thing of everyone going, yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it's good.
So here's the thing with it. My overall experience with it was positive. Definitely enjoyed it. But the more you think about it, the more it kind of breaks apart after the fact. Now, not in the same way for me that, like, say, Last Jedi is, where I was just kind of like, no, that really wasn't all that good a movie. Solo was kind of the movie where you're in the moment, very much like the character, actually, where you're in the moment, it's perfectly fine. You know, it's enjoyable. You're willing to go on the ride and have fun with it and just take what they throw at you and roll with it. But then after the fact, I'm kind of thinking about the narrative side of things. And obviously we're going to, or at least I'm shifting more negative, and I do want to reiterate, I did like this movie. But yeah, the story structure is so freaking weird. There's no, like, cohesiveness to it. Things just happen in it. It's just like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. I think the trouble is everyone's expecting this epic yarn, and it's like, no, this is just a Star Wars movie with heists and a oddball couple kind of running around and a bit of a love interest, a little bit of a, not really even a villain really so much to say in it. And it just was fun. And it was old, what I would call old fashioned Star Wars without all the, just the heavy weight of lore and canon. And this leads into this and this.
Go ahead and finish that thought.
Kinda like, to me, it was like, that's what Star Wars was when I was a kid. You had the three main movies, and you had the Ewoks movies, and it was just a bit of fun. There was none of this, you know, before the internet and before you spoke to anybody else, where it was in your own head, this was just what Star Wars was, and you didn't really, and like, it's like a movie of a different time.
See, it's funny that you say that, because this is actually a massively heavy lore movie. The entire point of this movie is the lore, which is actually working against it, because this is lore that should not exist. The entire point of Solo in A New Hope is that you don't know jack about this character. Mm. Is he going to betray them? Is he going to toss him out the airlock? Is he nearly as good a pilot as he says he is? We know none of these things when we meet him in A New Hope. This movie undermines that completely. And that just the mere existence of the movie undermines that completely. And this is such a movie that is surrounded by the lore. And even ignoring that, so much of this movie is dependent on telling lore bits. Where does Chewie and Han Solo meet? What the hell is the Kessel Run? Which, by the way, was the stupidest sequence in the entire movie, but we'll come back to that in a moment. You know, what? How did he get here? What's his backstory? And then on top of that, how does the Empire start, controlling systems? How do they keep people under their thumbs? Yeah. How do they build all their Star Destroyers? What is, what powers them? What's the energy? Everything in this is about building the universe.
But then that, to me, is that same thing as well. If you just look at it superficially on the top, and don't think about it and just take it as a summer blockbuster action movie, that's where the thing comes in. It's like, it's fun and exciting and all the rest of it on the top and pretty standard. So when you go into all the other bits underneath, that when you start thinking and researching and looking at, that's when it starts. And that's why I'm saying it part of me feels like that movie was from pre-internet days of just being able to just sit there and enjoy it. It's only when you put all the modern day stuff on it, that's when it kind of falls to pieces.
Well, that's pretty much the exact same thing I said. When you're there in the theater, it's fine. You can roll with the ride, and that's all it really needs to do. But yeah, the second you start thinking about it, it falls apart. But that is the thing. You cannot take a Star Wars movie, just like you can't take a Marvel Universe movie, in a vacuum. None of these movies exist in a vacuum. The only one that's even remotely true of is A New Hope, and that only from 1977 to 1979.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only time there was a vacuum. So, yeah, we can treat this movie on its own, but, you know, the same way that we would say, if you went into Avengers Infinity War having never seen any of the Marvel movies, you're not really going to get the same experience as someone who's seen all of them.
Yeah.
Solo is the same in reverse. You know, if you go into it without having seen any of the other Star Wars movies, you'll probably enjoy it more because you could just roll with it and not worry about where any of this stuff fits in.
Yeah, there were some aspects to it that there was a few things that first off that bugged me. First off was the love interest of Cora or Kara or whatever.
Kira.
She was so boring, so bland. I didn't care at all. You know, this was a character which I was just like, hey, it's jolly good old. They put in a little English lady in. It's like, I don't know her from Game of Thrones. So for me, I only know her from the movie where she had a bumblebee costume. So I don't really. Yeah, it was some some chick flick that my wife made me watch. So I'm watching her and I'm just like, this is so, I'm not interested. I didn't. It's like, oh, you're conflicted. I don't care. You're not going to end up with him anyway, so it doesn't matter. So it was like, I know where this is going. You're not going to end up with him, so it doesn't really. I didn't I just did not connect with her in the slightest. She didn't even need to be in the movie. That was fundamentally, from my point of view, if she wasn't there, it wouldn't have made any difference.
Well, she was a plot device, yeah. Primarily. I mean, I liked her actually fair enough. She was a decently interesting character, but at the same time, her primary purpose in the movie was, one, give Han a motive to join the Imperial Navy, two, give Han a reason to not get killed by the crime boss when he first meets him,
yeah,
and then three, give him someone to be a foil against in potential future stories, because now they're at odds with each other and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, she's a walking plot device. Now, to be fair, we haven't addressed the elephant in the room, which is the disrupted production of this movie. You know,
yeah.
Part of it was filmed by one director, and then the rest was finished up by Ron Howard. And how much of this, including Kira, is left over from before? How much of it is a patch job that Ron Howard had to do? You know, what would this have been like if Ron had been there to begin with? Yeah. And then from the start, and the honest answer is we don't know. A lot of the things that I would level as complaints against this movie might just disappear if it had a unity of direction right from the beginning. I did want to make one other point about Kira, and this is also a point about Han. I did not believe for a second that either of those characters were sewer rats on Corellia. The way they were dressed, the way they talked, the way they acted, you're like, how are you living in a sewer?
Yeah, they didn't seem desperate. They weren't raggedy, were they? It was like, we've got to get off of here because we're, it's like, but yeah, like I said, the whole thing of them being a vampire and touching the sun, and I'm like,
oh my, this is what I'm talking about. So you're talking about the character Proxima.
Yeah.
Proxima
Midnight, that she's got, you know, a big stick and loses against Black Widow.
And yeah, different Proxima, Lady Proxima.
I've never heard of this name. And in two movies, within 6 weeks, we get this
Proxima. So anyway, yeah, Proxima, this is one of those things. It's right at the beginning of the movie. It's she is the crime boss who both Kira and Han are indebted to. She raised them, taught them how to live on the streets, blah, 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 the usual story. And she apparently is deathly allergic to sunlight, which is never established, by the way. They're just like, yeah, she's deathly allergic to sunlight. And we prove this by breaking a window in her throne room with a rock, and then the light pours in, and she's like, oh my god, this is awful, my skin is peeling off. And like, well, maybe you shouldn't have built your throne room with a very easily destroyable ceiling light. This is... but it's one of those things, in the moment, you're kind of like, oh, it's cool because he's pretending it's a thermal detonator. He's even making the sound. She's just like, you just made a clicking sound. That's a stone.
Yeah.
And then he throws it through the window, and you're like, ah, it's cool. But then you're like, but nothing in this scene makes even the remotest bit of sense at all. None of it.
And there's also that thing as well of like this whole thing about, like, you know, paying a debt and doing this and being owed by this. And I was like, you've got the whole galaxy to run around in. It's like, once you leave that little town, you don't really, it's like, you could, if you'd move to another country here, you know, the little crime boss is not going to really going to have much chance of finding you, let alone in an entire galaxy. It was just like,
yeah.
What? Oh, that's,
well, I don't know, but we have to remember, and this is something we'll talk about next week, everybody knows everybody in Star Wars now. Everybody knows everybody. So, yeah, no, the galaxy may have hundreds of millions of planets that you could hide on, but I guarantee you Lady Proxima would find them within, like, a week, because somebody she knows would see them on some remote planet, and somehow, despite the fact that she is a local crime boss in the middle of a sewer on Corellia, she would be able to muster up the troops to go down and hunt them, and blah, blah, blah. We'll talk about that next week.
This is another side effect of this, is what I would really wish all the Star Wars stuff would start doing, and especially the new ones, start just using up some of the planets we've already been to in the other, like, two trilogies. I'm kind of, this thing of constantly going to new planets, it's a bit like, we need to go back, we can't keep just name-dropping planets, you need to kind of go back to them sometimes. That was a
except
side effect.
Tatooine. You don't need to go back to Tatooine. Know.
But it's just, to me, that's that thing of it. Other things from this movie which were a bit funny were, like we said, the Kessel Run wasn't really what I expected it to be. I didn't expect it to be some great big monster in the middle of some wormhole.
But
I didn't really... It was a bit like, well, why is that there? I didn't...
Yeah, so let's kind of break this down a little bit. For those of you who are listening who haven't seen it but also don't care about spoilers, the Kessel Run apparently is a very simple path through Amaw, and it's 20 parsecs long.
Yeah.
And in order to get the MacGuffin from point A to point B in time before the MacGuffin explodes, they have to do it in shorter than 20 parsecs, so they just cut straight through the Maw, which apparently has a giant dragon creature that lives by a black hole or something. And this is why this was a bad idea to write at all. Whether or not you do a solo movie, they should not have included the Kessel Run at all. This entire idea is stupid. Like, there is no logic to this run at all. Like, oh my god, it takes 20 parsecs. Like, who the hell cares? That's not how this works.
Yeah.
And the thing is, this goes back to my original point, where this movie, by existing, undercuts some of the story of A New Hope. The Kessel Run is one of those kind of, like, in-jokey things.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I didn't know what the hell a parsec was. I thought it was a unit of time, just like everyone else does. But if you were an adult when you saw it, or if you knew what it was, you kind of like, wait, parsec's a unit of distance. How does that work? Did the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs mean? That's literally, why is that important? And it further develops this, can you trust this guy, or is he literally just making stuff up on the spot? And even Obi-Wan's kind of sitting there going, like, this guy is totally full of it. But by having to define what the Kessel Run is, you've got to stay within the bounds of that little tiny weird definition that Han gave in A New Hope, while also making an interesting story that fits within this other narrative, and then also making sense of that claim. And it's just pure ridiculousness, whereas if you had just left the claim alone... And just been like, no, it's a ridiculous statement that he makes. It could be totally legitimate. It could be not. You don't know. It works better like this. But now, by defining it, you're kind of like, whatever. It's creating something concrete in something that should have stayed. I'm looking for a word here, undefined.
Personally, for me, is like the thing of Dunder's trying to escape from the Empire. It was like, okay, that's fine. It was a cool visual thing of this Star Destroyer and the TIE. Like, that should have been enough of a villain thing for them just to get away from them. That's why they needed to cut through and would have done it quicker. They didn't need the dragon. It was just this kind of thing of like, what? And you knew they were going to make it. And that's the trouble with prequels. You know what's going to happen. The only one you knew that was at risk was the whole team, which obviously they killed them all off, and Gore, or Kyra, or whatever her name is, because you know you've never seen them ever since. And afterwards, it's a bit like Rogue One. They killed off half the team that Han was working with, because it's like, right, we've got this movie, we're going to shove it full of characters that can die at the end because we need them out of the way before the end of the movie.
Well, not even at the end. They're just like, all right, those two characters you just got introduced to in the first 15 minutes, they're dead. Yeah. Bomb. Gone.
A couple of other quick kind of things that kind of... I mean, I thought like the meeting of Han and Chewie was done well. I thought that was kind of quite good. I didn't understand the whole... I think it was quite funny seeing Han as an Imperial officer. But there again, it's like they put them in the Mud Trooper stuff and he's back-chatting and he's arguing. And then they brought in new toys with new Stormtroopers. Like, you didn't need to do that. You could have kept it with the classic new look, and that would have worked fine. You didn't need to introduce more trooper outfits, because it's becoming a standardized, we need to sell more toys, so we're going to put them in different colors.
In fairness, that is a Star Wars tradition going all the way back to Empire Strikes Back. I mean, literally, the Star Wars franchise was created to sell toys. It is an a more mature version of the Transformers or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or whatever. So I totally agree with you. On the one hand, it's like, did you really need to create a stormtrooper armor for the guy, for the police stormtrooper who appears for like 10 seconds before getting knocked off his bike? But on the other hand, it is a Star Wars tradition. So I'll give them that one.
It just felt a little bit disconnected. I mean, that was that part, but again, it was this whole thing with the Empire really wasn't really a major aspect of this thing. You know, they're stealing all this stuff from them. It's like, okay. I mean, it's like, you know, and then you get this whole other side of things with this Eden Moss or whatever her name is coming in trying to steal. It's like, just take another unit. There's 25 of them on this train. You could have one each, and you don't. Why are you fighting over one? You're gonna help. It's like, well, why are you fighting over the one? There's 20 others that you could have nicked. It's just,
yeah.
And then the whole thing with them taking off the mask and becoming this resistance and all that was just,
yeah,
like,
let's talk about that one. let's talk about that, because there's two different things to unpack from that. We're talking about Enfys Nest, who is kind of an antagonist for it, but two very important bits for that, which you mentioned both of them. First, Enfys Nest is now going to be one of the starting points of the rebellion, which was completely unnecessary for a Solo movie. Yeah, I get they're trying to tie it into the bigger universe, but again, everybody knows everybody. Why the heck is Han Solo being involved in the beginning of the rebellion? That there's literally no reason to do that. Two, I'm going to say this, and the initial reaction will probably be sexist, so let me explain this before internet gets up in arms. Let's stop with the freaking take off the helmet and, oh my god, the badass was a girl all along trope. This is a really stupid trope. Not because I'm against badass women, but because it is a stupid trope. It's actually undermining the idea that women can be badasses, because it's like, you never expected this to be a woman in the first place, because women can't be incredibly strong characters. And it's like, no, that this is Star Wars. There is literally a long history of strong women characters.
The Beckett's girlfriend, you know, Newton, you know, she was a badass at the beginning, you know, and she,
right.
You know, to me, the trouble was once I took the mask off and she became a teenage girl, I was like, no, I don't care anymore. I just didn't.
Well,
she looked about 12.
Yeah, she looked about 12. She's apparently older than that. And I was a bit confused, because I actually got the impression that the Enfys Nest at the beginning of the movie was her mother, and she did die in the train explosion, and now Enfy is, she took over the role. In which case, I'd be like, I would murder the heck out of Han, because he is directly responsible for killing her mother.
Yeah.
But, you know, sure, we'll just ignore that part of the story, apparently. But the trope. Leave the trope alone. This isn't the first movie that's even done this in the past couple of months. It's a stupid trope. If you want to have an awesome woman character who can beat up Han Solo and whatnot, fine, have at it. But don't make it like, she was a woman all along.
Yeah, it was like, you know, she took off the mask and I'm like, okay, but now we got a teenage girl. And we want you to join us. And his hand just flicked like that. And I'm like, why? It was like, oh, because you're a good guy. Well, it didn't. And we're fighting against the Empire. Like you say, they were trying to squeeze it into this narrative of where they wanted it to go and to make him into this hero. And it's all interconnected. And they didn't need to do it. They could have left it. Or like, oh, Han nearly, Han helped start the resistance. Well, or rebellion. I thought it was already underway, because then when he left and he's like, oh, well, we might go to Tatooine, we got some, like, well, how long have we got between here and Han's and episode 4?
Yeah, and apparently it's actually quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, this is only a handful of years after Revenge of the Sith, so there's still quite a bit of time. And if this is truly one of the beginning points of the rebellion, obviously, you know, they have a long way to go before they get to where they're at in A New Hope. But yeah, I do want to specify this. I actually did like the character of Enfys Nest. I want to see more of her. I just feel like the way she was handled in this movie was pretty poor. And not just the reveal scene, just in general. They did not give her character anything, and it was just suddenly like, oh yeah, she's part of the rebellion. Okay.
So before we kind of end off, because we've kind of gone a bit long.
We've gone negative. Let's do some positive things here.
Darth Maul. That was Darth something Maul's I cool. was not expecting when he popped up, as that was like, okay, cool. Now we're getting into something a little bit more interesting. You know, that's definitely setting up future movies and future plot devices, and he's obviously no longer Empire. He's out for himself. Wasn't expecting that. So that was a cool little twist. I knew there was a cameo. That was what I was getting the gist from, but I didn't have it spoiled for me. So that was kind of good. I thought Paul Bettany, he wasn't the best villain.
It was okay.
This is where this kind of situation of having too many villains, but not really giving them enough. You know, we had what, 4 or 5 different enemy villains brought in at some point during the movie, but they never really fully went one way or the other. So there was too many of them, because we had what, Proximina, we had Korra, we had
Malak,
Beckett, we had, you know, there was too much of it, and none of them became a threat because there was too many of them.
Yeah, I agree. I actually really liked Bettany's character, but again, a lot of the stuff that he did was just kind of like, oh, you kind of have to do this because the movie requires you to do it.
Yeah.
But he was entertaining, and I did like that in the end he was working for Maul. The cynical part of me thinks that they're like, well, we're going to throw Maul in here to try to encourage moviegoers to buy Clone Wars and Rebels DVDs. But, you know, at the same time, it was a nice little toss-in. And now there is one other major factor in this movie that we haven't discussed at all and we need to, and that is Lando Calrissian, who I have to say, Donald Glover was fantastic.
Yeah, he seemed to work very well. It was that kind of thing of, he was charismatic. I loved him with the robot. I mean, that robot was pretty cool.
L3, yeah.
Yeah. I thought that worked very well.
His obsession with capes was weird.
Yeah, he wasn't in it as much as I was hoping he was going to be in it. It was a little bit, it didn't seem to be as major part of the movie that I thought it might have been.
But again, it's another one of those things where kind of showing his history with Han maybe undercuts Empire Strikes Back a little bit. Because when you meet him in Empire Strikes Back, you're like, can we trust this guy? Can we not? Is he going to betray them? Because, you know, the initial walk-on is him saying very nasty things to Han, and then, no, they're embracing in a hug, and then he's kind of fishy, and you don't really know where it's going. Just simply having shown the history of them kind of undercuts that a little. Having said that, I think, as I said, Donald Glover did a fantastic job with the role. I would totally be down for watching a movie about Lando.
Yeah.
Don't stick Han in it. Not for any reason against Alden or whatever, but just, you know, drop the everybody knows everybody thing. Just have him do his own adventure for a little bit.
No, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was a solid movie. I thought it was fun. I'm gonna watch it again. It's like all these. It's like you said, the nitpicky stuff is because of the whole thing that how they set it up. But again, in that moment, I enjoyed it. I'm never gonna sit here and go, that was the best Star Wars movie of all time. This is, you know, let's. It's like it was good. It's like I thought Rogue One was better. I thought that was a better solid. That was a better movie. But just generally as a whole, I thought it was fun. It was enjoyable. Little issues, but it's just one of those things. I think with Star Wars it's got so stretched out with mess of stuff that this is where that movie comes under.
Yeah, and like I said back at the beginning of this episode, we focused very heavily on the negative aspects of it, or at least I focused and kind of directed us in the negative aspects of it. But I did have fun with this movie. I did enjoy the movie. I'm going to go see it again. And you should just go see it for what it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit into the bigger picture all that well. There are mistakes made. It's definitely disjointed due mostly to the director's swap out. There's some serious tone problems with it, but it's a fun ride. It is an enjoyable movie. It definitely does not deserve to kind of have the level of apathy associated with it. But we knew that going into it, and that's
another honestly, topic for next week.
That's a topic for next week, but the very, very short version of it is it's a victim of circumstances. Yeah. And it really didn't deserve to be. So if you've been kind of on the fence and you've sat through this whole thing where we spoiled all the major plot points, still go and see it or even rent it from Redbox. But don't be like, I'm never going to see this movie for blankety-blank reason. Just enjoy it. Just know that you're getting what it says on the tin. You're not going to have an existential moment.
It's a Star Wars story. It is.
It is a Star Wars story.
On that note, guys, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back soon with another episode. Go check out James over at heroiclegacy.com. And on that note, guys, thank you very much. May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.